Do you like to laugh, geek out on music, and learn all about that band or artist who had that one song back in the day, but then seemed to fall off the face of the earth? If so, you need to subscribe to One Hit Thunder. Together with an array of interesting and hilarious guests, we do a weekly dive into one-hit wonders like Eiffel 65's Blue, Krayshawn's Gucci Gucci, EMF's Unbelievable, Delamitri's Roll to Me, Los Del Rio's Macarena, Musical Youth's Pass the Dutchie, and even Patrick Swayze's She's Like the Wind. So are you subscribed to One Hit Thunder or what? As Desiree would say, you gotta be. And as K7 would encourage, you gotta come, baby, come and join in on the fun of the One Hit Thunder podcast.
Hey, welcome to Unstable Topics, a fast-paced, jam-packed, unhinged bestie podcast filled with facts, reacts, and made-up games in between.
We're your hosts, Sarah
and Maggie.
And we're excited for you to join our best friend hangout, where we surprise one another with things we find interesting or hilarious just to see how the other will react.
Our friendship might be totally stable, but you never know what your bestie might throw your way to knock you off your game.
So come shake things up, learn something new, and laugh along with us. This is Unstable Topics.
Another episode of Horror Movie Night. This week, we're talking about one of Kyle's picks, Blood Beat from 1982. It was my first watch. I think it may have been Scott's first
watch.
Hell
no. What are you...
Okay,
you
well, I don't know Scott.
Huge.
Kyle, was this your first watch? And if not, why did you pick it?
Yes. So it was my second watch. We're coming into the holidays. And obviously, I think the same way that we have... As horror movie fans, we have a selection of Halloween titles that we watch. I think that we have a selection of Christmas titles that we watch. Even though we may watch non-horror Christmas movies, we also probably throw in some classics here. And Bloodbeat is by no means a classic, but it is...
I don't think I've ever seen it in the thousands of times that I have Googled Christmas horror movies for us to pick in December.
It's definitely had a renaissance.
Thanks to Vinegar Syndrome.
Yeah, I was about to say, is it Vinegar Syndrome that we have to thank for this? Yeah,
and that's what led me here. It's probably one of my first. It's one of my first Vinegar Syndrome purchases that I had made. And anybody who listens to this show knows how much I love them. And this one's a little bit unique. Because it's not that unique, but they, you know, I watched it on the disc, and at the disc they're like, you know, they even front load it saying that all the negatives that they had were pretty rough. So like some of the, you know, there's a lot of mold lines or mold, you know, issues, and the credit sequence they couldn't even salvage, really, like the final, you know, the final credits, and you know, but it's all in all for a French filmmaker to film a weird Christmas horror movie in Wisconsin, and to have that be
quite high,
while super high, and having that be the only thing that they do, it made for a decent it wasn't as entertaining the second time for me, but it was still fun, especially knowing that we were watching it for this show.
All right, so I've got three things to say. One is a fun fact from IMDb trivia, and the other two are quotes from reviews that I found while I was doing research on this.
Good.
So first of all, fun fact, the director was not aware that the film was being shot in a full screen ratio until 15 days into production.
That's crazy.
Amazing.
That was my TV movie, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then there's a review from RuMorgue that says... Blood Beat is essentially an 86-minute non-sequitur full of odd dialogue, random characters, sudden bursts of cheesy optical effects, lunacy, sex and death, juxtapositions that never make any sense, and the movie rarely has any of its desired effect. But it does keep you watching just to see what nuttiness will be pulled out of the director's hat next.
Yeah.
And then I just love this single line review that I grabbed from Film School Rejects. I'm sure there was a longer review, but this one line: "I'd be lying if I said I knew what the hell was happening plot wise."
Yes.
And yeah. I feel that. Like this.
I feel that too.
I don't know what it is.
I didn't learn anything.
Nothing. There's this weird vibe with horror movies that take place at Christmas that either it's a killer Santa Claus movie or it is just fucking insane. Yeah. Like
that's
there
true.
Are
There's
moments
no
where this movie is so confusing and so bizarre and just like nothing makes sense. It's like watching fucking Elves, man. Like it's just like, what is happening? There's Nazis now? Like what is this?
Yeah, yeah. The samurai doesn't. I was hoping to have a little bit of light shined on it. Oh, besides the glow of the blue glow. I was hoping for some more logical light, none of which came to me in this viewing. And I watched this afternoon. While Hunter was taking his nap,
no Doritos, no nothing.
Well, and I was just sitting there, broad daylight. The sun starts to come into our living room, like right around like the two.
That
two
wasn't
o'clock,
when you had like a burst of intuition. That wasn't.
No, that wasn't the light. That was also not the light that I was looking for.
It's kind of like, you know how at the end of Rock and Roll Nightmare, it just turns into a completely different movie for like 10 minutes. This really feels like three different movies that were being made simultaneously. Because like you said, The Samurai makes... I still don't understand this samurai thing. The psychic mom artist, I don't understand. And then there's just like simultaneously... Simultaneously, yeah. It's just like fucking four Christmases or Christmases with the Cranks happening. So they were just like, oh, the wacky adventures of like dealing with my redneck family out in the woods. Like, it's so bizarre. Like,
yeah.
And the choice of music. The music choices throughout this movie is chaos. Bonkers.
Well, I love that the it's like introspective intro music. We watched the guy with the bow. He's like out hunting. What's his name?
Gary.
I
was going to say, I hope you're not about to name one of the actors, because this is one of those rare movies where there is not a hyperlink to be found in the Wikipedia
page.
Oh,
absolutely not. No. And you can tell by the acting. Yeah. We'll get to that. No, what I was going to get at is Gary, the man who wants to make mom a legitimate woman. He wants to marry her, and she's like, "No, we got a good thing going," which is basically like, I don't want that ring. I just want the sausage that goes through the ring. I don't know.
Yeah. I don't want that ring as much as I want your thing.
Thank you, Matt. There you go. Exactly what I was getting at. So mom doesn't want it. She just wants to bang because she's an artsy type, I guess.
Right.
But,
and her kids are out of the house now.
Yeah,
like,
they're
she's
in college.
Just trying to focus. Yeah,
she's just trying to get laid. And Gary's like very disappointed by this. He's like,
he's very traditional.
A dead deer for you. And you don't want to marry me?
It was literally caveman logic at that point.
Yeah, he was like, this is the worst Christmas ever.
Yeah, I've beaten the saber-toothed tiger to death as a sign of love.
Because, you know, back in Neanderthal times, they had saber-toothed tigers and Christmas.
Yes.
I guess the through line of this movie is, long story short, psychic mom and live-in boyfriend are hosting Christmas. And this is for Matt, so that Matt feels like he saw the same movie as me.
Yeah.
Hosting Christmas. Son and daughter and son's new girlfriend, who is also force-sensitive, I mean psychic, comes home for Christmas. And they proceed to mind meld mom and new girlfriend, because that's what happens when you're a boy mom.
Because real recognizes real.
Yes.
And they just...
And then...
They're scanners.
Yes, exactly. And it just... But the weirdest thing about mom's mutant power is that it completely annuls
any boom mic or ADR of everybody on in this film. It's like she couldn't be asked hard enough to come to the to come to just do her ADR. And so all of her shit is so bad. I think it's because she is the least professional of everybody in the film. But
yeah.
I digress. So mom and daughter, or eventual daughter-in-law, you know, girlfriend.
It's Ted and Sarah. We can use those Ted for and reference
Sarah.
Points.
So mom and Sarah mind meld. It awakens this ancestral memory from the whitest girl you know you've ever seen in an 80s movie. She's cute. Mm-hmm. I love her bangs. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But she is the reincarnation of a killer samurai that mm-hmm. somehow that reincarnation is able to manifest its outfit from beyond the grave.
Yes.
She puts it on.
In a trunk that's not part of that.
Weird, very weird. I'm wondering if we missed a little backstory where mm-hmm. the trunk was brought to the house by Gary, or maybe that weird guy that was staying in their mm-hmm. extra bedroom that they mentioned.
Oh yeah,
because
there was a psychologist who was staying in that guest bedroom, but then there was also some flashbacks to what seemed like World War II. So maybe it was brought home from the war.
Maybe the dad who is no longer in the picture or something. So
they're all wearing camouflage, but they're also hunters. So I don't know who's a vet and who's not.
Yeah. It's also really really confusing when your son is named Hunter as well.
Yeah, dude. I don't know.
People are like, Hunter, and you're like, where's my son?
What? Where's he sleeping?
Yes. anyway, so she gets reincarnated. She comes every time someone gets stabbed with that samurai sword, by mm-hmm. the way.
Listen, no, we didn't miss that part. That
okay,
was
just,
a detail
just,
that we yeah,
I know
no,
that
we,
that was
we
kind
were
of
all
like
aware
a subtext.
Of that
you know, I know that Lair of the White Worm at the beginning of last month was very like oblique with the fucking and the dildos and the snakes.
This is a little
but
this is the samurai sword's a little like harder to know for sure.
Much harder. I mean
harder. Very hard. Very
sharp.
Can we
use the word tang? is it full tang? Anyway, so the brother
tang?
And sister also have latent psychic powers. They fight off Sarah and the reincarnated samurai soul that is in her body. She dies, and then they just leave all the dead bodies in the house for someone to find on New Year's Day.
Yeah, it's a fucking massacre.
And
dog.
There are like six dead bodies in that house.
It's really and maybe this is fresh.
Or maybe
head
not this
I,
this I, house, but around the space.
I went and saw Clue the movie, the stage show, and they really kind of follow through with the plan that Tim Curry proposes at one point in the movie. He's just like, we're just going to take the bodies, stack them in the basement, and leave like none of this ever happened.
Like, yes.
You know, in 1980, when this was filmed, there were no forensics like, I don't know, fingerprints.
Yeah.
So,
well, the other
no
thing
one's
is that,
like, is there any semen on the scene of the crime?
Yeah.
Not they didn't find any semen, but
these
they
footprints
sure found a lot
look
of...
like samurai shoes.
How strange.
And they just stop.
I've heard rumors partake of a series of giant turtles that know karate, and I believe that what we're experiencing is the Foot Clan.
Yes.
So we might want to get on the line with that.
Someone well, called New York City.
Apparently nobody fucking cares if anybody dies either. So that one guy who
really
gets shot, right, in the hunting accident where Sarah
well, so he's
flips
not
the
just,
fuck out.
He's not just shot. He also gets, like, eviscerated. And it doesn't make any sense because
I'm
guessing that you're supposed to imply that that's the spirit of the samurai's first kill. But
I don't get it. It didn't read to me, man. I didn't get any of that.
I'm trying to
find the fucking cop just goes,
here.
Oh, Merry Christmas, everybody. So we'll take your dead friend away.
He's like, you don't know this guy? And everybody's like, never seen him before in my life. He's like, are you sure? They're like, I'm sure. And then they go, fine, we'll just take him to the morgue. We'll give him a pauper's burial. Merry Christmas to him, too.
Merry Christmas, everybody.
I don't know if they just don't linger on the dead bodies or the kills that long, but it felt like every time I looked down to type a note, because this is the first episode where I have given up the analog pen and paper. I finally moved to the digital age of note-taking.
Welcome to 2022.
But it felt like every single time I looked down, I'd look up and some character was gone and dead, and I would have to consult Wiki and be like, did I really miss that? Like, the only one that I really caught was the neighbor's wife getting killed in the kitchen.
Yeah. What was she making? Was she making Metamucil?
Who even knows? All I know is that
this was back for the orange. She went back for orange juice, and then I don't know what else she was.
But she was mixing some powder in, and I think that was Metamucil.
Tang.
Full Tang.
That was full Tang.
Yeah, she was getting some Tang. That particular one, I did have to write down a note that it felt like a giallo because that blood is just so can of red,
yeah,
like all over the floor.
Here's one thing, Matt. I know that as white cis male podcast hosts, it's hard for us to know when a woman is orgasming. This is the easiest way for you to find out. Is there a dead body? Is there someone missing who is no longer living? Sarah definitely came at least once, maybe twice.
No one has ever had better sex than Sarah has while
another notch on the bedpost.
Like
with a samurai sword.
This is a wild ass movie, and the idea of looping this into Christmas is so nonsensical because it plays nothing into the plot. Like, this could have been
a
Thanksgiving getaway. It could be like any other holiday.
People aren't going to come home with a new girlfriend unless it's Christmas, Matt.
Well, so that's the only thing that I like stuck, that I latched onto was that, like, and it obviously disappeared a third of the way through the movie. Like, it was gone. But like the whole time Sarah is visiting and like not gelling with the family, really, mm-hmm, I'm like, oh, that's interesting. Like, I was like, yeah, being a significant other brought home for a holiday has its own sets of anxieties, right? And I'm
it
like,
does,
oh, yeah,
but
oh, interesting. And then it fucking doesn't, it's not that it doesn't do anything with it. It just decides to go to the psychic mom connection route. I'm like left without, you know, Sarah fucking destroys their family Christmas.
Destroys their Christmas. This is the thing though, and maybe this is obviously coming from a guy who has been single for 16 years, but like, I feel like Christmas is the worst holiday to introduce someone to your family. Like, Thanksgiving, Easter, like some of these like low and or even better, like Memorial Day or 4th of July that are like meaningless holidays. Like, hey, I want you to meet my family on a holiday where
Matt,
you're...
Did you just say that 4th of July and Memorial Day are worthless holidays? Are you trying to say that this country isn't important to you and that you should respect those holidays?
They're great excuses to get some barbecue and go swimming. Anyway, so
to the people of Wisconsin,
who the fuck is swimming on Memorial Day?
My point is, like, if you have a new girlfriend or boyfriend, if you have a new significant other, if you are dating somebody and you're trying to figure out the day that you want to introduce them to the family, maybe the day where they're expected to give and receive gifts from people that they've never met before, not the best first day.
The mom already knew. Sarah had a passive-aggressive gift under the tree that was
She
ready
should
for
have
it.
Gotten a samurai sword as the passive-aggressive gift. That would have at least made
we would
some
have connected
fun. And that
it,
awakened
yeah.
something in
right.
her life.
And she'd be like, what the fuck is this? And the mom's like, this is from my dead husband. I don't know. Like, just make
just,
her really uncomfortable. Give her a reason. To fucking kill
There's a
everybody.
Moment where Ted is Ted, right? Ted's Sarah.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. So Ted's comforting Sarah after the person got shot, where I was just looking at Ted and I was like, when does Ted start regretting this whole decision of bringing Sarah? And I like, normally, like, I am totally usually on the woman's side, but I clearly know where this movie was going to go. So the whole time I was just like, ah, Ted's really regretting, like, this whole bring Sarah to his fucking, there's, like, from the jump.
There's so many pieces of, supposedly, I've never really watched that much Red Letter Media. I know that they're very popular. But apparently one of the guys from Red Letter Media, when they did an eventual episode, had said that he was planning to remake the movie. He later came out and said that he was joking, but that he genuinely thinks that there is something in this plot that if
here.
Handled better could actually be a good movie that's just like
know.
In the
Can
worst
we, like,
hands.
Not have it be a samurai because that really doesn't fit.
That's the samurai is the biggest strike. The samurai I literally feel like the samurai aspect of this movie is similar to the way the robot monster looks, where it's like, well, we had a gorilla costume available, so we just threw the...
Yeah.
Like, it was like, I don't know, we had a gorilla... You know, it's like the Robert Rodriguez quote about, like, indie filmmaking, where he's like, I knew I had access to a guitar case, a turtle, and a bus, so they were going to go in my movie. Mm-hmm. And that was, like, mm-hmm. him making El Mariachi. Mm-hmm. Like, it was like...
it's something like that, but you... Like, when you have... When you throw in a million other things, being like, it's Christmas, and yeah. then yeah, when you have
a Christmas horror, I'm fine with it being a Christmas horror.
I totally feel like there is some. I feel like there's something there, and I don't, and I would love to see it done right, because especially by the time like this sort of final battle happens, this final psychic battle, I'm like. You know, Joe Bigas does a little bit of this. He did Almost Human, and he did another one, Sequence
Oh,
Break?
Almost
no,
Human.
It wasn't
Sequence Break. That's a is that yeah. a Christmas movie? I've seen it.
It takes place in winter. I actually don't know if it's Christmas. I don't remember if it's Christmas
I liked
or not,
that one.
But he did Sequence Break? I think Graham Skipper was in Sequence Break, and he might not
I don't,
have
done, I don't think
there's
he
one
did
or
Sequence
two other
Break.
Movies.
I think that, yeah. he
did, this is the guy who did Bliss, right?
This is the guy who did Bliss, and his first two movies, it was Almost Human, and then another one that had like very Scanners-esque.
Almost Human was an alien movie, though, right?
Yes, Almost Human was an alien
one.
Movie, and it was done. It was done for like $50,000 in Rhode yeah. Island. It so shit like that is like it's Bloodbeat to me. It's like it's sort of regional. Mm-hmm. Like it's weird. I mean, Almost Human has a more through line.
Oh, there's a lot more plot in that film.
There's a lot more going on. But
there's
like,
a lot more plot on everything in this movie.
But that makes me think that Bloodbeat could happen as a remake now by. Some you know indie horror filmmaker that can just like piece it together.
But I would.
Make it
but
fun.
That's what I mean. Like here's like a dumb idea that I'm just
the
thinking.
Mind's Eye is what it was called.
Yeah, thinking out loud. Just thinking out loud as we're discussing this movie. Because you're right. Like we should be sympathizing with Sarah way more than we do mm-hmm. in this fucking movie. And I'm like thinking about that. I'm thinking of like something like You're Next. And I'm like, well, what if you start this movie not with like a marriage crisis between husband and wife. But, like, some bullshit, like, property lines debate between them and their neighbor. And it's, like, the mom's fucking possessing Sarah to just go and kill the neighbors. And then, like, she can't stop killing. And now they're, like, caught in the crossfire of the bullshit that they did. I don't know. It's no dumber than what we actually got with Bloodbeat.
It would give us at least a motive. So it could be worse.
A motive, for sure.
It would give us anything. I do love the neighbor scene. I love... The neighbor Paul just flying out the fucking bedroom window.
Which I read was the director.
Yeah, that was the director.
Was the director who,
you know
who
what? He's got a real look. There's a lot of things that have come out recently that proved what we all kind of knew, that was Vince McMahon was a bad guy. But he did what we say. He'd never ask a wrestler to do something he wasn't willing to do himself. And I get that vibe from this director. He's like, I won't ask you to jump through a window unless I'm willing to jump through a window. So let me jump
like,
through a
do
window.
It. I'll do it. I'll just do it. This was fun to watch with subtitles because whenever there was a sound effect, it said mysterious boinging.
Yes. Did you see the people, there are tons of people on Shudder that are like, yeah. I watched it with subtitles specifically for the mysterious boinging.
Lots of mysterious boinging, yeah. Which I appreciated.
Do you like to laugh, geek out on music, and learn all about that band or artist who had that one song back in the day, but then seemed to fall off the face of the earth? If so, you need to subscribe to One Hit Thunder. Together with an array of interesting and hilarious guests, we do a weekly dive into one-hit wonders like Eiffel 65's Blue, Krayshawn's Gucci Gucci, EMF's Unbelievable, Delamitri's Roll to Me, Los Del Rio's Macarena, Musical Youth's Pass the Dutchie, and even Patrick Swayze's She's Like the Wind. So are you subscribed to One Hit Thunder or what? As Desiree would say, you gotta be. And as K7 would encourage, you gotta come baby come and join in on the fun of the One Hit Thunder podcast.
Hey, welcome to Unstable Topics, a fast-paced, jam-packed, unhinged bestie podcast filled with facts, reacts, and made-up games in between.
We're your hosts, Sarah.
And Maggie.
And we're excited for you to join our Best Friend Hangout, where we surprise one another with things we find interesting or hilarious just to see how the other will react.
Our friendship might be totally stable, but you never know what your bestie might throw your way to knock you off your game.
So come shake things up, learn something new, and laugh along with us. This is Unstable Topics.
Hey, do you have an idea for a podcast but don't know where to start? Or do you have an already existing podcast that you want to take to the next level? Well, check out WeKnowPodcasting.com. From concept development to theme music to editing to logos, WeKnowPodcasting.com is a one-stop shop for all things pod. Don't hesitate to hit us up. We're very nice.
Kyle, do you regret your decision?
No. This was fun. I did feel a little bad. I feel like I haven't been entirely considerate with my choices. Well, as soon as the deer came up, I was like, ah, god damn it.
Yeah. I'm glad that we decided to skip right past that conversationally.
Carcasses. But the funnier thing about that is I think it's funnier that people freak out about animal carcasses but then they're like, put that piece of meat on the grill and make it medium rare. You know, like,
right. Listen, Scott, I am very proud. Well, I'm not very proud. Let me be an ostrich. You know what I mean? Like, I don't see what's happening, so I don't have to worry about it.
That's the thing, though, is that I have tried to pull your fucking head out of the sand. My wife has tried to pull your head out of the sand, and you're just like, repress it. So I've stopped. We've been friends for a decade, the entirety of my veganism, and you know, I find it amusing. I'm not upset by it. I think that was definitely a real carcass. I'm assuming that they ate it.
Oh, there's no. I don't think this movie had a budget for a fake one.
I think that they had such a low budget that they actually murdered people in this movie.
That's why you can't find any more information.
Yeah, that's why there's no hyperlinks.
More hyperlinks
to the obituaries.
More so about more so than the carcass. I just feel, even though we got to talk about it and it was fun, I feel like there are better movies or more enjoyable movies that we could watch together as a family. But not for Christmas.
It's Christmas. Mandatory
fun. It's Christmas, damn it.
Yeah.
Going forward after my January pick or my January pick,
yes.
Which has already been chosen.
I'm happy about your January pick. It's going to be a fucking blast.
But I'm going to think about things a little bit deeper before
I pick them next time.
Well, this was fun. I'm not regretting this decision by any means. I'm just aware. Okay.
Quick question. I have a question for both of you. Did you know that there was there's this band? This shows me that the internet is a crazy place. This isn't bad information or good information. It's just information that exists. There's a band called Nervous Curtains, and they imagined another soundtrack for this, and they made a synth soundtrack for this like a couple years ago. It's on Bandcamp. You go to nervouscurtains.bandcamp.com/album/blood-beat, and there is an entire 28-minute stream of consciousness synth soundtrack concept that they put together. It's not amazing, but it's cool that somebody was like, hey, this absurd piece of garbage from 1981 or whatever that was filmed in Wisconsin for next to nothing is going to inspire me to write 28 minutes of music. I mean, that's cool. Like, if I was the producer of this movie or the writer of this movie and I hadn't, you know, coked myself to death, I would be like just chuffed, you know?
Yeah, that's pretty exciting.
Oh, but hey, Kyle, did you have a drink for this?
No,
I do.
Please show me. What do we got?
It's the inaugural oat milk for the year.
Yeah!
Let me open it. This is a new kind. It's Elmhurst Rich and Creamy Oat Nog. Now, I always wait until Thanksgiving to start my gluttonous consumption of oat. It used to be eggnog, but it's oat nog now. So let's see if it's any good. Smells good.
Yeah. Okay.
It's made with cashews.
Okay. So was it like $50?
No, it was $7. It came from World Market.
Okay.
It came from a mini fridge in a hotel. Like,
I have very small hands, and so it looks big in my hands, but it's actually only 4 ounces. But it's actually quite good. My only problem with plant-based eggnogs is that they're not like choke you thick. You know what I'm saying?
I need that.
Like the stuff that I grew up with was so
the Hood Golden Nog, right? Like that's got to be. What'd you grow up with?
Well, it was called eggnog, but I mean it's just got like pasteurized eggs in it and it's got heavy cream and that shit is like swallowing honey. It's swallowing wet honey. It's so thick that you can barely fucking swallow
I've never had eggnog in my entire life.
That doesn't shock me. There's a lot of shit you
And I feel like it just looks like a loogie. Like when I see people pour it into a glass, I'm like, that looks gross. I can't do it.
Some oat That's why you gotta drink it out the fucking bottle. Like,
you just don't give yourself time to think about it.
I want it to like coat my entire body. I want it to be the Pepto-Bismol of Christmas.
Wow.
Still have never found
that. Yeah, that's
that.
What it is. In an oat one?
Well, I mean, for
what
a bigger
one. What could
you do
to thicken it?
You could thicken
what
it
What could
with,
you do to thicken it?
Semen.
Matt! We went an entire Christmas episode without talking about cum.
I know, we just had to bring it around.
Well, we talked about Sarah's orgasms. We
just did the female equivalent, but no.
Her cum was a ghost samurai.
Yeah. So one more question about ghost sex. What do you want to pick for your double feature for this then?
It's fucking wild because I went through because of the tonal shifts of this all, I went through three double features and I ended up on Pumpkinhead. I think that there's some sort of Pumpkinhead doesn't feel fully regional, but it definitely feels folk-y.
Yeah.
And even, I don't
I'd
know.
I'd consider it folklore.
And the Bloodbeat is not, there's this own folklore in it. There is this idea of you've awakened this thing that's now coming into your home and it's just destroying your fucking world. Yeah. And Pumpkinhead is that. That's my double feature.
So first I want to say that the name Bloodbeat... I knew nothing about this movie. I went in this movie completely blind. This has nothing to do with my double feature. It's just something I want to mention. I genuinely thought that this was like some type of horror comedy with cops in a similar vein to Dead Heat.
Oh man, you were.
Because I'm like,
confused.
Yeah, they're beat. You know, like the guys. Like Ted's mom is so eccentric and weird and bizarre that she just kept reminding me of the aunt in the beginning of Sleepaway Camp.
Yes.
And I was like, man, I really want to watch Sleepaway Camp. So I'm just gonna go with an Old Faithful
that's,
on this
that's
one.
A tonal
Sleepaway
shift
Camp
for sure. And you know, I'm not going Christmas with this either because. It's hard to top
because the movie barely
does. But I'm gonna go with another Midwestern small film that I love so much, with a very similar title, with Bloodhook.
Blood, of course.
Got Bloodhook and Bloodbeat.
I thought you were either gonna do Bloodhook or Blood Rage, and I
you know
wasn't
I
sure
thought
which
about
one
Blood Rage,
do.
But I it's like too good, you know. But Bloodhook is way more. The speed that I'm going for if I'm doing a Bloodbeat night.
Yeah.
No, I think that's fair. Yeah, because this movie is not, like I said, I picked Sleepaway Camp on this. I mentioned Rock and Roll Nightmare. I mentioned Elves. Like, I think that those are all movies that are so insane that I constantly am thinking, like, I can't wait to watch that movie again or show that movie to more people because I know that they'll have a good time with the chaos. I don't know if I'm there on Bloodbeat.
That's fair.
Like, Bloodbeat, I don't think is on that same level of just like, this is fun and bad. It's like, this is cheap and bad.
But, that's Bloodhook as well. It's like,
yeah,
it's just, it's cheap. It's not good. A lot of people put in the bare minimum, and yet there is something charming about it.
There's something there.
You know,
there's
but, I mean, there. I think there's a lot more in Bloodhook because I've watched it more times than Bloodbeat, and I will continue to watch it because it is just—it's a superior film. It's a superior product. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a piece of cinema.
Yeah.
But Bloodbeat does have its own je ne sais quoi.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's just only in a third of the movie and not the full movie somehow. Yeah. So,
all right, well, Kyle, have you been watching, reading, listening to, or anything else that you want to promote on here?
Listen, I I have 40 minutes left in Halloween Ends, and this is not how I wanted to watch a movie at all. I did not want to watch it in installments, but literally it's the only way I've been able to get fucking anything done. However, I did somehow manage to watch all of Halloween 4 after
yeah,
we had our Halloween.
Yeah, that's my boy.
I don't have excuses anymore. It was the first time I watched Halloween 4.
Really?
I've never fucking
seen it.
Did
you enjoy the watch?
It's fun.
Yeah, Carly looks to me and goes, "This is a perfect movie."
Yeah, Carly.
And it's not because it's good. It's not good by any means. But there is this certain aspect, and I think it's of Part 4s, which we put my coworker Jocelyn on blast the other week because she said Wrong Turn 4 was her favorite. But I think that there's something to be said, because we've had this conversation about sequels being their own thing and sometimes being better than the first. I don't think Part 4s are ever really better than the first, but they have this way of reigniting something in the franchise, whether it be an origin story or like coming back from Part 3 or like, totally detouring, like whatever it is. And Halloween 4 does that, and I love it for it. And again, like, I mean, I don't have any nostalgia attached to it, or like I have nothing. I actually literally thought I had seen it before and I didn't. I have nothing about it.
The thing that's weird with like Halloween 4, and I guess this makes sense. So I've always said that I think that one of the reasons why Dream Warriors is such a beloved movie is that I do think it is the perfect example of how you do a sequel properly, where it's like you push the story along. Mm-hmm. You amp up the killer, you boost up their power set, but you give us likable characters that we want to see survive. And I feel like that is like every single beat of Halloween 4. Like Michael Myers is a little bit more brutal than he was in the first movie. He's a little bit more powerful than he was in the first movie. It follows kind of right where Part 1 2 ends, and you give us likable characters like Daniel Harris. Like it checks all of the boxes for like, this is how you make a good sequel to a beloved film or beloved franchise. And I think it's also why I like Halloween H2O so much as well, is that I think mm-hmm. H2O does all of those things.
Agreed,
It gives us likable characters. It boosts.
It's
up
the fourth
the kills,
from four, so. Technically. You know what I mean? Like it kind of follows that path. This is why I like Texas Chainsaw Next Generation.
Okay, well,
it does not check all
Scott,
the boxes.
What have you watched?
All right, that's it. That is actually it for me.
That was amazing.
Please, what else do you guys get into?
So, obviously, we're discussing this in the beginning of December, but we're recording this on the 1st of November, and I'm giving that information because last night, as I planned, I finally sat down and watched the Out There Halloween mega tape on Halloween night, and it's fucking great. Like, We already kind of gave a lot of mouth hugs to Chris LaMartina during the Halloween movie draft when we were talking about WNUF, but this is perfect. I loved seeing Dylan and his sister throughout the whole first half of the movie. I loved hearing Scott's guitar playing in the beginning of the movie.
It's so crazy that it's like the first section of it.
Yeah.
But I also got to give massive credit to all the musicians that were involved, because there is so much music in that. I rewatched it last night myself, and I was just like, I'm just blown away.
And this is obviously because I really have loved WNUF. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I like it more than WNUF, but it is a stellar companion piece to that movie. It totally works. I love that he changed it. And I think he said this to us on the show before, or maybe he was just talking to us just casually at a convention, but like, you know, WNUF takes place in the 80s, Satanic Panic, that was the big thing, so that's what he targeted. But like in the 90s, you've got like the Alien Autopsy specials, and you've got the X-Files being like the biggest show in the world. Like, so it's way more alien-based as opposed to like, oh, the Satanic Panic side of the first movie. So, I mean, just, and again, I feel like as a non-filmmaker, but a person who always wanted to be a filmmaker, the way he does so much with so little as far as the finances go is just admirable.
He definitely
over and
had
over
more
over
money
again.
For this one, because
he did, but still it's like, it's still what, like a tenth of what like typical indie horror movie would even be.
Absolutely.
Made with.
And it's so funny because I watched VHS 99 And each one of those segments, because it has like, what, four segments? Each one of those segments certainly has a higher budget than the entirety of the WNUF sequel. And it wasn't good.
No.
It was
well,
bad.
That's a great leeway, because I'm done. What is, was that your, what
well,
did
no,
I watch?
Well, no, I actually don't want to, you know, I think that I've been a really good boy this year. After Matt laid the smack down on me early in the spring, and he was like,
the samurai will come and visit you and leave you presents for Sarah. And
he'll leave me severed feet if I
and the deer. He doesn't want the deer. He's re-gifting the deer.
If I don't speak about nice things. So I hated VHS 99. I fucking hated Smile. It was so terrible. But I really enjoyed Saloom. Have you guys seen that? Have you heard about it?
No.
It's it's on Shudder. It's a it's an African movie, Nigerian. I can't remember where it's from, but it is kind of a genre bender because it is, I mean, at its core, it's a horror movie, but it's also got a lot of action movie aesthetic to it. It's also got kind of a bit of a heist movie thing going on. I don't want to really give away anything about it because when it does become a horror movie, it's cool. I mean, like, it's not a perfect movie, but I love what they did with a small budget, you know, like I love that when we get that is when there's that scrappiness that, I mean, it's definitely a bigger budget than WNUF 2. I'm not really trying to say that. I'm saying that, I just love when a passion project has people in it, everybody is firing on it with that same energy. That same positivity where they have kind of a singular goal, that vision is understood, and it's a really effective movie. I highly recommend it. It's on Shudder, if I didn't mention that, but watch it on Shudder. It's short. It's like an hour and 19 minutes. It's really, it goes. Highly nice. Recommend.
All right. Well, that was Blood Beat from... I got multiple different dates when I was looking this up. 81, 82, and 83 were all different search results.
And they're all right.
Yeah, they're all about right. As picked by Kyle, if you think that we're done talking Christmas horror, no, there's more. In fact, there will be three of the 4 weeks.
There would have been. The irony is that one of us didn't pick Christmas.
The guy with a Christmas podcast said, "Nah, I'm good."
But I guess
we'll be back next week with another movie that I had literally no clue was a Christmas horror movie until I hit play. So stay tuned.
Do you like to laugh, geek out on music, and learn all about that band or artist who had that one song back in the day, but then seemed to fall off the face of the earth? If so, you need to subscribe to One Hit Thunder. Together with an array of interesting and hilarious guests, we do a weekly dive into one-hit wonders like Eiffel 65's Blue, Krayshawn's Gucci Gucci, EMF's Unbelievable, Delamitri's Roll to Me, Los Del Rio's Macarena, Musical Youth's Pass the Dutchie, and even Patrick Swayze's She's Like the Wind. So are you subscribed to One Hit Thunder or what? As Desiree would say, you gotta be. And as K7 would encourage, you gotta come baby come and join in on the fun of the One Hit Thunder podcast. Come baby come, baby baby come, come. Come baby come,
baby baby come. Hey, welcome to Unstable Topics, a fast-paced, jam-packed, unhinged bestie podcast filled with facts, reacts, and made-up games in between.
We're your hosts, Sarah
and Maggie.
And we're excited for you to join our best friend hangout, where we surprise one another with things we find interesting or hilarious just to see how the other will react.
Our friendship might be totally stable, but you never know what your bestie might throw your way to knock you off your game.
So come shake things up, learn something new, and laugh along with us. This is Unstable Topics.
You're listening to the Geekscape Network.